Hydrating, aye?
What if I am? What of it? Oh, that's good. Tasty East Berlin tap water. It's the finest. It's vintage. Hello and welcome back to Stadio Podcast and Ringer FC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
Hydrated, actually. Really good. Well rested.
I'm not hydrated. I'm not well rested.
Tell you what's weird. My alarm went off this morning and you know when you're like so deeply asleep that your alarm goes off and you're like, that's far from the first ring. That has been going off for like a few
days.
Yeah. It was like that. I woke up and I was in And maybe it's a good thing. I hadn't slept that heavily in a long, long time. I'm not sure why that is, but I think it's a good thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, wide awake, ready to go at it.
Do you know what it is today?
The first day of the rest of your life? I don't know.
Our 100th episode today.
Someone, was it Jess? Soccer Sabbatical sent us Stadio Centenario, yeah. Which is like such a cool name. Jess Malone. Thanks, Jess. Wow.
100 episodes of Stadio. It's obviously not 100th on the Ringer. I think it's episode 35 or 36 since we've been on the Ringer already.
Stadio Centenario. That is incredible.
How have we lasted 100 episodes?
Amazing. How? I don't know.
The amount of hours we have wasted chatting to each other about Rolex and number eights.
Yeah, but still here, still standing. Both got hoodies on for the occasion.
We have both got hoodies on for the occasion. A rare show of solidarity.
Exactly, a rare show of solidarity. Entente cordiale.
Anyway. 100 episodes, so allow us to go a little bit
sentimental.
Yeah. We want to say thanks to everyone who's listened over the last 100 episodes, who's got in touch, who's sent questions, who's, I don't know, recommended it to friends or unsubscribed because we talk about women's football.
Yeah.
Like that guy who tweeted us just saying, not for me, dog.
And he got no reply whatsoever.
I was just like, I looked at it and I thought, just going to let that one just
float into the ether.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. We always get a little bit sentimental about stuff like this anyway, but last year or so has been a little bit wild. I mean, just in life in general, but
yeah,
the last thing the world needed was another football podcast. And for some reason,
we inflicted it.
So we obviously decided to do one, but we really appreciate everyone who is into the stuff we do. I don't really know what else to say about it really, apart from, I don't know. Let's hope we last another 100 episodes. All right, admin then.
Admin.
Don't forget, if you want to buy our theme music, it's for sale and we're donating all the money. You go to stadio.bandcamp.com. It's a minimum of €3, but you can pay what you like. The information about the organisations we're donating to is on there. I had a piece go up on The Ringer this week with an unbelievable headline. I'd love to find out who wrote the headline because it was...
Did they come for
very
you?
Very strong.
Did they come
no,
for you?
No, it was amazing. Dare to Dream Dortmund, it was called.
Yeah, it's a great, great piece.
Thanks, man. About, yeah, hopefully that young group sticking together. You've got a piece going up next week.
That's right.
I think that's, oh yeah, Stadio Outros. We playlist everything that we play out on a playlist on Spotify. For those who don't know, just search Stadio Outros on Spotify. And I think that's it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
I suppose it's probably just a reminder to hydrate. That full spin.
I thought you were taking your time today.
Straight in there.
Hydration waits for no man.
Exactly, it waits for no man. No, exactly, no creature. Sea or land.
We'll let Musa hydrate and then we'll get into some transfer mailbag stuff.
We will indeed. Break.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
All right, man. So the transfer window is...
geschlossen.
Zu.
Yeah. Oh, even better. Even better. Wow. That's perfect German.
And it's back open in a couple of months. So less than 2 months, it's open again. Before we get into the questions about the transfer deadline, who for you was the most interesting signing on transfer deadline day?
On the day itself, and sorry, because I know this is not an Arsenal podcast, I still think it was Thomas Partey. Because I want to see what Arteta does with his skill set, which I think has been underused. This is a guy, Thomas Partey, who used to play as a 10 and a winger before ending up as a defensive midfield pivot. And I wonder if Arteta has looked at the guy and been, ah, what can you unleash? Because they didn't get Hassan Awar from Lyon, which is a great shame. And he was really good against Ukraine, actually. Top of a diamond for France against Ukraine. He looked really good. But I think Partey could galvanize Arsenal in a really interesting fashion. So he intrigues me the most. He's not my favorite signing of the whole transfer window. My favorite signing is Ross Barkley to Aston Villa for so many reasons.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But the most intriguing for me is Partey.
I would agree, actually. It seemed to be the most high-profile signing of transfer deadline day, a position that Arsenal very much needed, but also I don't think there are many players out there like Thomas Partey, actually. No. Obviously, he gets kind of widely known as like being this defensive midfielder, but he's not. You know, he can be.
Yeah.
He's got so much more to his game than that. I think that just calling him a defensive midfielder doesn't give him enough credit, really. I think that what Arsenal really need at the moment is, I think I've said it before, that they've got a few midfielders who kind of do a lot of similar things and they're all kind of all right.
Mm.
And I think that Partey basically gives them it raises the base level for them to build a midfield around.
Yeah, definitely.
I wasn't surprised that they didn't get Awar. I think that will be someone that they earmark for next year. But it's really hard to get everything you need in one window, I think.
It really is. You've got to keep adding pieces, especially when the pieces you're going for are so coveted.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the thing about Thomas Partey is that I think he's just going to really click straight away. I think his skill set really suits the Premier League. What I really love about Partey is his ability to sense when the right moment is to nip in. You know how some defensive midfielders, their highlight reels are just them sliding in all the time. But he has this really nice sense of timing where he may wait, he'll take a step back, he'll stop, and then he'll push someone.
Yeah.
Either nip the ball off them, shepherd out of play, slide in with an interception. But the speed at which he generates kickstarts a transition basically from winning the ball back to driving forward. His forward passing ability and his technical ability in terms of driving forward is something that Arsenal will really need, because it's something that Dani Ceballos can do. But I don't think that anyone can do it to the level that Thomas Partey can. And I'm just really, really excited to see him in an Arsenal midfield, because I just think he's someone who... I mean, I'm really surprised that no one else went for him.
His second leg performance against Liverpool at Anfield blew me away.
Unbelievable.
It blew me away. That was him and Joao Felix were on a different level that evening, in different, very different tactical briefs. But Partey, I think, even above Joao Felix that evening, was astonishing, because he was pretty much, I mean, that pivot was basically all that was standing between Atleti and annihilation. And there's almost no other, in fact, there's no other team in Europe at that point that could have withstood that barrage. He was unbelievable. Yeah,
I'm really hyped about it. And also a really interesting thing about it was that apparently the money was just fronted by the Kroenkes. They just basically provided the funds to pay for the signing, which raises a really interesting thing for me, though, and a bit of a... I don't want to go too negative on episode 100 and we're talking about transfers, which are really fun, but we had a few questions about the situation at Arsenal. I cannot pronounce this Twitter name. SFNSYOI.
Oh, that's difficult. Okay, well, at least he spelled it.
They said, do Arsenal just share too much information? Pay cuts, org chart changes, redundancies, scouting network firings, Edu and Vinay interviews, and now Gunnosaurus is this level of sharing what other clubs do. There was another thing someone said from Chris Shoup Worrell. It would be interesting to hear your thoughts on the Gunnosaurus saga and specifically Ozil acting as a bailout fund. To me, it says so much about the neoliberal culture of football that you two have previously talked about. I think this is a weird one because obviously the Thomas Partey signing comes in with the backdrop of Arsenal making redundancies and then the Gunnosaurus made redundant after 27 years. So Mesut posted that tweet that's, you know, he's offering to reimburse Arsenal with the full salary as long as he will be an Arsenal player.
There's a couple of things here. The first thing is, do Arsenal share too much? Well, look, Arsenal's a club under so much scrutiny that things will leak. So sometimes when a club makes an announcement, it's better that you make an official announcement knowing it will leak at some point anyway.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, then, like, so Arsenal do not have the luxury of keeping that many secrets because there are so many Arsenal fans in and around the media. There are so many Arsenal people. There are people that, like, work at Arsenal who leave jobs at Arsenal who then start talking about Arsenal, like in the commercial department, for example. I remember like a few years ago, one year that Arsenal had a really bad transfer summer and someone that was working there as an executive left, not at a high level, and then came out and started telling friends of friends. So like someone in the office I was working with was like, oh yeah, we just had like Arsenal's transfer business. And I was like, yeah, you see that stuff just gets out. And of course I didn't tweet it, but you hear about it. The Gunnosaurus thing, someone asked, was it a beautiful move or a PR ploy? And I'm like, well, bit of column A, bit of column B, because if we're being really honest, if we're just stepping back from it, you're making a large amount of money. Nothing to stop you privately contacting whoever and going, is so-and-so taken care of? Is Jerry taken care of? You could handle it that way. Like, it could be done that way. And so I think it is both. I think it is a generous move. And I think it is also, you know, strong public relations. And we know that Ozil's good at public relations because he uses his Twitter account to pretty impressive effect, it has to be said.
Yeah, he's really stepped it up since the World Cup. Huh?
Yeah, so I think the very fact we know about it, yeah, it makes us regard him favourably. But also, this is the thing, Ozil took a lot of heat, and I don't blame him for saying this publicly, because Ozil took a lot of heat for not taking a pay cut because he wasn't sure about, like, what is this for? How's it going to work? Like, a lot of the fire was turned on Ozil for not taking a pay cut.
And actually, he proved to be right, I think.
Yeah, I think he was right. So I just think I wouldn't begrudge him some good publicity and visibility on this. And here's the irony, of course, of Thomas Partey being signed. Thomas Partey is the player who will best enable Ozil's talents in Arsenal's system. He's the most likely. It wouldn't, you know, it still might not work, but Thomas Partey's defensive strengths would allow someone like an Ozil to flourish in a diamond.
By the time you listen to this, you might already know that Mesut Ozil is set to be cut from Arsenal's Europa League squad and more likely Arsenal's Premier League squad as well, or both.
It's extraordinary, yeah. What has happened there, Ryan?
To swerve off from the Arsenal stuff now, maybe we can talk about that another time because we'll get more info about it. I read Amy Lawrence's piece on The Athletic about this morning. And
what has happened there? Anyway, yeah.
Let's move on to some questions. Okay, so this is actually probably my favourite signing. It pushes Barkley for it, but from Jonathan Vaering, how do you guys feel about Mario Götze to PSV? I personally hope he just gets to play again and enjoy it. I'd love this signing.
I adore it. Do you know what I love about it most? Ruud van Nistelrooy coaches, I think, the under-19s, right? Eindhoven is a nice town to go and just like do your thing. Like, and those two will be catch up in the canteen and Götze will be like wandering around the training ground and like young players will be looking up at him in awe. He's a hero to them. They grew up watching him be a hero and it's going to be really good for them to see him around, but I think it'll be even better for him to see how that generation will look up at him and be like, they won't see him as, oh, you're this guy that like was a free agent at 28 and you had these injuries. And they won't see that. They'll just see like a hero. And I think it's really important for him to go and revitalize in a place like that. I'm super excited about it. And I think that it's like, it's a really ambitious signing. So it's a great, it's a great signal to other clubs in the Eredivisie, but also to like other young players going, oh, if they can capture something like that, I'll go and have a go. He's still a really good player, Götze.
I'm really excited to see how that works out because I think he's got a lot to offer still. And I think he'll have a lot to offer in the Eredivisie. I think it's a really good league for him to play in. I would have loved to have seen him go to Spain, actually. Part of me that was kind of like, could he go to Sevilla?
Yeah.
Somewhere like that, you know, or Betis. I'd actually love to see him at Betis. That would have been really fun. But we always want everyone to go to Betis. If we had our way, then...
Everyone, yeah.
Basically, Betis would have a squad of 9,000 and no one else would have like any other players.
Plus, Betis are just fine for brilliant midfielders, attacking midfielders.
True, very true. But yeah, no, Mario Götze to PSV, I love that signing. I really, really love that signing. Actually, in terms of, we were talking about who, one of your favourite transfers before, about the Ross Barkley to Villa. I actually think Villa, in the Premier League bar Chelsea, I think Chelsea, in terms of, if you look at the talent they actually bought, I think Chelsea had the best transfer window.
Yes.
Overall.
Yes.
They would have been out of sight if they'd bought maybe another defender.
Yeah, I agree.
Or a different defender, actually, as much as I like Thiago Silva. But in terms of the actual talent they brought in and keeping hold of players like Hudson-Odoi, who didn't go to Bayern, you can't really argue with Chelsea's transfer window. And the thing that I really love about transfer windows like theirs is that you have a really successful transfer window and not once does your name ever get mentioned on deadline day.
That is the most Chelsea thing ever, though. They are actually talking like things leaking. They don't leak. They're really interesting. They're actually the closest to, I would say, and this is a credit to Granovskaya, who's just an exec, who's an outstanding exec at Chelsea. They conduct their business like investment managers. They buy, you know what it is? They buy players like they're making investments in the stock market. It's probably the same process. Like, you don't know. And I'd be interested to see what Granovskaya's background is. Whether she worked long in financial services, because it just feels like the same approach, which is why the Ed Woodward thing is strange at United, because he's a guy that works in financial services and you would have thought the discretion was like the absolute watchword.
No emails. It's like, you want to offer someone? You come and meet us on this private jet that's in a hangar at this airport.
Yeah.
You get 5 minutes to make your offer.
I bet it's all intermediaries as well. I bet it's all intermediaries. No phones, yeah.
Which I love. That to me, if I was a football exec and someone wanted to make an offer for a player, like for example, if I was Dortmund, right?
Right.
If I took over from Vatska at Dortmund, I think I would really lean into, have you seen Ozark?
No.
Right. So there's like this kind of like gangster guy in Ozark who conducts this meeting very much like that way. Like, he's on a private jet, it's in a hangar at an airport, and he's eating when someone comes in to chat with him about a proposal, and he just carries on. He's like, I'm having my dinner and then we're turning this thing around and going back to Mexico. I'd really lean into that. I'd be like, you fly over, you get 5 minutes, no emails, no phones.
Amazing. Take it or leave it.
Imagine building like the cult more of Dortmund, being like, yeah, if you want to make them an offer, you have to actually go see them.
I'm sure there are clubs that do business like this.
Doesn't come highly recommended during a pandemic, admittedly, but
just not very distant.
You know, this is all a bit of
an ecological crisis, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
but exactly. Yeah.
If fuel were clean,
let's play hypothetically that
exactly.
All planes are electric and you can charge them and everything's renewable.
Yeah, I like that very much. Yeah. I like that very much.
They come and meet you and actually maybe you're not there when they get there. And all of a sudden, like, they think you're not there, but you actually are there because you just flick one of the overhead lights on, you know, like you have on planes, and then you're just there.
You're in the room the whole time. Yeah.
Like, fuck, he's here. let's go to a break. All right, back from the break, let's go to another question. This one from Cameron Mills. This is another signing I really, really like. How do you like the fit of Sessegnon going to Hoffenheim? Is this a good club for his development?
Incredible. That's incredible. Like, Hoffenheim are a perfect club to find yourself. It's where Gnabry went, and they've got a tradition of developing young talent. Firmino came through there. You'll link up with Kramaric, which is fantastic. And Kramaric is like, you know, the Kingslayer. He scored 7 goals against Dortmund and Bayern in the last 2 games he's played against them. And he can't stop scoring, actually. I think he's physically incapable. That's a great signing because you've got an attack that's already functional. So there's not pressure on Sessegnon to get in there and deliver immediately. Mm. I think it's outstanding. It's almost as exciting as Justin Kluivert to RB Leipzig under Nagelsmann, which for me is the most exciting overseas transfer of the window.
back to Hoffenheim.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the thing about the way that they have so far kind of lined up this season, like Sebastian Hoeneß has basically been playing a back three. So I think for Ryan Sessegnon, this is perfect, actually.
Yeah.
To play as a wing back in a kind of midfield four or five they've tended to play. You know, they played five in midfield, I think, against Bayern. They played four in the first game of the season when they beat Cologne.
Yeah.
We're only three games into the new Hoffenheim regime, if you like, and they lost to Eintracht away, which I don't think will end up looking like a bad result in hindsight. Adi Hütter seems to have turned a bit of a corner with
they
Eintracht.
They beat Hertha as well. They're a decent side, yeah, yeah.
Sebastian Hoeneß, he intrigues me this season, I think, you know, and he's obviously come through the Bayern system. He's highly rated. And I think someone like Ryan Sessegnon will play, and he'll play in a league that is a good league against good sides. And I just think it's a really good move for him. I really like it, actually. Bundesliga bias, you know, I'm so hyped about seeing Matteo Guendouzi play for Hertha Berlin, because it's either going to be unbelievable and he's going to completely run things, or it's going to go so bad that he's going to be sent home at Christmas.
Yeah. This is a really important move for him. This is a really, you know what this is? This is like his, you know how like Renato Sanchez has Lille?
Mm.
This is Guendouzi's Lille. There are only so many huge clubs or big clubs at which you can get it wrong.
Mm.
And it's a really bad sign when you, it's like Cuisance. Cuisance has the same thing. Like the next club that Cuisance ends up at, where he gets regular football, sorry, will be so important for him.
Pass the Marseille medical.
He passed it. Oh, fantastic. So that's big. So Cuisance, basically, Cuisance from Bayern to Marseille and Guendouzi to Hertha, these are like big seasons for them both. Obviously like astonishing talents, but they've got to kick on at this point.
Yeah, you're right. It's an interesting move that I think it's going to be one to keep an eye on, because Marseille also are just they're really starting to move, Marseille.
Mm. It's always weird when you go on loan as a player. I've always felt, because there's that sense that something's gone wrong, right? It's an inescapable feeling that something's gone wrong. If you're on loan, unless you're going for experience, that, you know, something. If you're on loan, you get bored and you get loaned immediately, then it's kind of get your experience somewhere else and then come back. Or it's like David Beckham going to, I think, Preston for like five games and scoring twice and coming back. Like you've been told, you've been reassured you're part of a long-term plan. Whereas someone like a Jesse Lingard, you go on loan, you know, like two or three clubs away, and you're like, or like Lukaku. Lukaku doesn't get enough credit for his kind of loan odyssey. And it takes an incredible mental resilience to fight back from there. You know, it takes it's a huge resilience. So, you know, obviously best of luck to them both. But Guendouzi at Hertha could be an interesting element.
It's going to be fun, and I'm going to go and watch a lot of Hertha now, I've decided.
Oh, yeah.
I was a bit gutted that Jeff Rennie Adelaide didn't get there. He ended up staying in Lyon. But whilst we're there on Bayern,
yep,
they've quietly had a really tidy transfer window.
Yep, they have.
Picking up Nianzou from PSG, Choupo-Moting from PSG on free transfers. Obviously, they had Alexander Nübel coming from Schalke on a free transfer. That signing was arranged or agreed midway through last season. Mark Rocker coming in from Espanyol, which I really like that signing.
Solid, smart signings. You know what it is? It's people who don't expect to start but will make huge contributions.
Yeah. They took Bouna Sarr from Marseille as well. Brought Douglas Costa back on loan as from Juve, which
solid.
Strikes me as a bit of a Coutinho-Perisic kind of deal.
Yeah.
And obviously Leroy Sané coming in from Manchester City.
Really strong. Strong and stable.
That's a big haul for £55 million. What's that? Just over €60 million.
Super smart.
Quick one from Justin Salhani. His beloved Hatem Ben Arthur moved to Bordeaux. And he says, please address Hatem Ben Arthur to Bordeaux and why they've won the transfer window.
They have won for the simple reason that the shirt number, as Justin proudly showed me, says, he's an eight. He's a number eight. So that alone is thrilling. He'll have a great time down there. They'll build the team around him, or the attack, hopefully. Well, hopefully they will. What an interesting career Ben Arthur's had. It's tough when you look at someone like that.
I wish he stayed at Newcastle.
Well, there's a lot of talk about people achieving their potential, but then I look at someone like Ben Arthur and think, did he go as far as he could have gone? Given his his ascent and what he went through to get there and how he had to fight and his personality and all the things, like the challenges. Maybe Ben Arthur did the best he could. Like, he's got some great career highlights. And if you look at the teams in which he was most successful, it's where they were kind of like, it's almost expressions of his personality, like fighting the power. He never starred in a big team. He always starred in teams where it was us against the world. So maybe he was never ever going to thrive in a huge club because there was too much rigidity, too much rigidity, I think is the best thing. So if you look at, Justin wrote a great piece for us actually for the Stanley website on Ben Arthur. One thing I would say with Ben Arthur is, I'm not sure if he was ever as highly rated as he was. I wonder if he was slightly out of time because the Ben Arthur era where you had two defensive midfielders behind a 10 that basically went and just wreaked havoc. You know, like the Serie A era is such a specific, his skill set is so suited to a specific era. And I think it was kind of like Serie A, two hardworking defensive midfielders where he plays a kind of Rui Costa alongside a brilliant number 9. So I think he could have been a Rui Costa in a different era.
Ooh.
When players are massive what-ifs, at a certain point you're like, there actually wasn't any more there. That fundamentally, the same...
Mercurial.
Yeah, the same thing that enables you to fight out of wherever you came from, like not being able to trust people easily, needing a very particular type of treatment. So few football clubs, especially in the fast-moving results era, are ready to take that little bit of extra time to get the best out of you. Someone like Ben Arthur might need 6 to 12 months of like careful trust building. Managers don't have that.
Yeah.
It's not that there's not a great player in there. We know there is. That's why he still actually is playing football at 33 because everyone's trying to unearth the gem. He's at Valladolid. Well, at Valladolid, the style they play, they are intense. Anyone that watches Valladolid, that is an intense team. They are hard running, they're defensive. There's not room for a player like that. And it's only room for him if you basically, everyone else runs. And you run, but only forward. So yeah, it's a shame for him. But at the same time, I hope he got a good paycheck out of it because it's always good to see players of that talent who've been around for that long, you know, look after their later years. Maybe it's be like Ren for him again. He was brilliant at Ren.
I just want to see him do well, like at least enjoy the last few years of his career. I thought he would have been a perfect move for an MLS side, actually, at Ben Arthur. I think he would have had a really nice time over there. We'll see. I think, you know, when you see a certain player or a player of his kind of skills, his talent, let's say, because talent-wise, on their day, there were a few that could come up close to Ben Arthur, really. Like, on pure raw talent alone.
Yeah.
I don't think that's OTT to say that.
Too much talent's a curse. It's a curse.
Yeah.
Do you know why? Because you're the guy, and then one day you're not the guy. And it's gone. And the speed at which it's gone, you look at like, you know, Ravel Morrison, you look at, and this is not for different reasons, someone like Fran Merida. Fran Merida was an astonishing player. And I don't think he ever got complacent. It's not that. It's more that Fran Merida, basically, you're so hotly tipped and all of a sudden the rug is pulled from under you. You're tipped as like the future of Arsenal. And you look at him now and he's, you know, Rodrigo Possebon. I mean, he broke his leg still. That was bad. But there's a lot of these players who, everyone rates them and then all of a sudden they can't get a deal, they can't get a contract and it just, your confidence falls off a cliff. Like, we don't talk enough about how psychologically it must have been for someone like Ben Arthur to be so hotly tipped and then all of a sudden not have the offers coming in. And my worst example of wasted talent is Hugo Viana, who was like, what? Best player in Europe. Best young talent in Europe. Went to Newcastle United under Bobby Robson. And just never kicked on. And Hugo Viana was the future.
Yeah, it's really strange how things like that roll out.
It really scares me, actually. It scares me. I think, when I say it scares me, like, I'm a writer, so I've got plenty of years to achieve my potential. But it scares me because nothing frightens me more than potential which is not achieved, not fulfilled. It really scares me for some reason. It's like, maybe it's a silly example to use, but when I started out writing, I was really hotly tipped at a certain age, like 13, 14, and didn't deliver for like years. Didn't deliver for years and finally got my stuff published. And whenever I see, it sounds a bit ridiculous, but whenever I see a young player doesn't achieve the potential, it's really haunting. Because I know what it feels like for expectation to be around you, and like years later, like you still haven't done it. So yeah, good luck to Ben Arthur and good luck to young players out there. And actually, like, good luck to all young players at the start of their careers, because they've now released this list of like next generation talent.
Oh, did you see who was number one? Well, not number one, but the very top, the first
Ansu.
One.
Is it Ansu?
No. Federico Redondo, son of former Real Madrid's midfielder Fernando.
Oh my God. Sorry. Oh my goodness. Be still my beating. Good luck to everyone on that list.
Do you know who he plays for?
Wait, Argentinos Juniors?
Yep.
Oh my God, that's perfect.
It's almost too good, huh?
That's too good. You know what? Okay, look, I just want to say at this point, good luck to everyone on that players list who's hotly tipped, because not everyone will make it and there'll be some severe disappointment for those players along the line. And the key is not the disappointment, but how they bounce back from it. So good luck to all of them.
Very quickly, before we take another break, we had this question from Murray Lewis saying, would love an in-depth chat about the outside of the top six in the Premier League's transfer business, especially Everton, Villa and Palace. We kind of spoke about Villa. I think they've signed really well. Obviously, Ollie Watkins and Ross Barkley coming in, I think, is going to give them... I mean, the thing about Ollie Watkins, which I really like, and we bigged him up the other day, but the fact that Dean Smith knows him so well anyway.
Yeah.
They spent a lot of money, for sure, but they also spent a lot of money last year. But having the pieces like Tyrone Mings and stuff already there, they're going to be one to watch this season, Villa, because they just look... I think we said it before, like taking the load off Jack Grealish, yeah, having someone like Barkley there, that's going to cause people some problems this season. And I think they're going to be fine. Palace, I think, have had a really tidy transfer window. And I'm not sure if he's signed yet, but it looks like Nathaniel Klein's going back.
That's a great acquisition.
And I hope that works for him as well, because you know, he's 29 now, Nathaniel Klein. Like another case of Walcott's law.
Yeah, you're young till you're old.
I know he had some injury. He had quite a number of injury problems, didn't he, at Liverpool? But
yeah, he had the unfortunate experience that he was good enough for Liverpool when he got there.
Yes.
But then, unfortunately, I mean, if you look at the first team that Jordan Henderson played in for Liverpool, and he's been there for like 9 years now, 9-10 years. The first thing that he played for, I think it had like sort of Jay Spearing in there. Like, you know, good, these are players that were good players, but they weren't players of an optimal Liverpool. And I think that's happened to Klein. He just got, actually, weirdly enough, it's what's happened to Gylfie Sigurdsson in a good way at Everton. Mm-hmm. Gylfie Sigurdsson is a very, very, very good member of a squad that can threaten and do interesting things, particularly in cup competitions. You wouldn't go against Everton having in the future like a really strong and deep Europa League run. But Gylfie Sigurdsson is not the main creative force in a truly elite Premier League team. I don't think that's being too harsh, but he's an outstanding secondary option creatively. And I feel like Klein was in that bracket, that unfortunate bracket where you're like, ah, you're just like, you're fourth gear and what they need is a fifth. So I really like that move for him. Eze signing.
Love that.
Humble dude as well. Very humble. Similar kind of club to QPR. You know, a club which is like hardworking, tradition of good football. He'll be combining with some great players at Palace as well. Take some of the burden away from Zaha, the creative burden. I think it's a lovely signing. I think it's great. A
couple of other quick ones before we go to a break, because when we come back from the break, we're going to do some random questions about the 100th episode. Michael Cotton, is Edison Cavani going to be more of a Falcao or a Zlatan?
Zlatan.
I agree. I really think Cavani's going to do some damage this season.
I agree.
There's part of me that thinks that even what he's come in after, was it 4 Premier League games? He's got 34 Premier League games left to play. At the end of the season, if you said, oh, Cavani scored 25 goals, I'd be like, yeah.
It wouldn't be weird. No. Because he's not a wasteful finisher. This is an outstanding player. I don't think there's any objection, really a wholesale objection or widespread objection to him himself. He's an amazing professional. He will score goals. He's a superb finisher, extremely technically gifted. He's powerful. So yeah, he ticks all those boxes. I think that the concern is more with the long-term strategy for the team. But yeah, Cavani himself is above reproach. PSG fan base adore him. Like, he's a legend.
Yeah.
Absolute legend.
All you can ask from signings is that they're fun signings. And I look at that signing and I'm like, I'm into that.
They're going to learn a lot from him.
And also, I think it takes a lot of pressure off that front three because they're young still.
Yes, and he's the perfect signing for them in so many ways, because he will be an absolute pro. I mean, shout out to Johanna Frandon, who covered Zlatan at PSG and saw a lot of Edinson Cavani up close and was just like, this guy, just an absolute professional. Like, just by all accounts, a wonderful human being.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all over that signing. I think it's great. Yeah. I really do.
It's kind of signing, actually, so Alex Ferguson would have made. But the only difference was he would have made it much, much earlier in the transfer window.
That's the thing. Cavani's been available all summer.
Exactly.
I know that much has been made about Manchester United's transfer window being a complete catastrophe. If you know he's available, I know there's some wild agents' fees involved. But it was so clear that they weren't going to get Sancho, so the money was going to be there. As soon as that August the 10th deadline passed on Sancho, they should have just gone. They should have just moved on. Yeah. There's that real long read on The Athletic about, with all the details about the Sancho Man United saga. And it was just like, it's like hearing the Benny Hill theme tune whilst watching it.
It was. Kind of just all I'll say briefly is the appetite for humiliation remains undimmed in the commercial department when it comes to transfers. I mean, like, all the players they've chased over the years, and this is perhaps the biggest humiliation yet.
Let's take a break.
Yep.
All right, back from the break, final part of the show. We're going to whiz through some questions relating to the 100 episodes. This one from Ola Fizeo says, over 100 episodes, what's the one thing you never thought you'd say?
Oh, Liverpool the catfish.
Oh my God.
I never thought I'd say that, and I did say that. And they weren't the catfish, but I just wanted to say it.
On that note, we had one from Conrad Field saying, seriously, what is a catfish? I don't know if that's a serious question, but basically we've gone into this before. It's a team. We don't like going individual on catfish. They're teams who show so much promise to do so well and then don't.
Yeah.
Or show much promise on one side and end up being something else.
Yeah. So what's your thing you thought you'd never say?
I think it was, if you think that makes me a communist or a socialist, then fuck it, I'm a communist.
That was quite gangster. Actually, what can I say this as well? Like, in terms of, like, I'm always struck by how closely, I'm struck that people listen, but I'm struck by how closely people listen. If I have to just, take a moment to like express gratitude for that. People really, really pay attention. Like, you get messages now and again, you're like, whoa, like, you heard that? Like, you thought about that? You pushed into that? Like, people are really, I don't know, that's really gratifying. Cause I said this before, it took me years to start a podcast because frankly, I was like, who the hell is going to listen to what I have to say? I never thought anyone would actually want to listen to anything I had to say.
Oh, shut up.
No, it's true. Look, I'm 40, I'm 41, like, very soon. Like, I'm 40.
Aren't we doing a podcast on your birthday?
No, I don't think so. Well, like, if I can't say what my birthday is, I can't tell people when it is. That's weird. I can't do that. I don't know.
You told everyone when my birthday was.
Did I?
Yeah, on the podcast, you're like, it was your birthday yesterday.
Really? Did I out you? That's different. Yeah, it's different because I'm shy and retiring.
And you tweeted it.
I'm shy and retiring, right? I'm shy and retiring. Yeah, yeah. I'm different. I've got my stuff.
Anyway, get back to you. No one wants to listen to me, blah, blah, blah.
What's the next question? Get us the next question.
I think what Moose is trying to say is thanks, everyone, for listening to him because no one wants to listen to him apart from me. Now I'm stuck with it.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
This one from Matthew. I think Matthew told me off for pronouncing his name wrong last time, but obviously via text base, he couldn't correct me on the pronunciation. So I'm going to go for it. Matthew DeMattia. To guess the headlines that you'll be discussing on your 200th episode. So two a week, 50 weeks. So about a year from now, a couple of weeks before. So it'll be end of September.
Transfer window energy.
Yes. Or will it move back to normal end of August last
year? So there'll have been all the new transfers with a new club for a season already. Okay, do you know what? Okay, here's what will be a year from now. 2 years from now.
No, 1 year from now.
1 year from now. Okay. Okay, here we go. Gio Reyna gets season off to thrilling early start at Real Madrid. No, Gio Reyna gets Real Madrid.
Oh, my good God. Wait, listen, really? After the piece I just wrote? Listen, carry on like that. There's not going to be 101 episode.
Ansu Fati and Gio Reyna, the new gods of La Liga, the new Clásico, new boys of the Clásico. That's it.
Oh, but the thing is, it makes so much sense.
It does, doesn't it? It does. That Rail will come and try and pluck that jewel.
I really want that Dortmund side to stay together.
You do?
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't like that. It makes so much sense, but I don't like it. It's like doing this podcast. 100, a year from now. That's a really tough question, actually. Probably going into another international break. After Mason Greenwood goes down with an injury, Manchester United's second failed pursuit of Jadon Sancho is looking even more of a shambles. That's what I reckon we're going to be talking about in a year.
Pochettino lays down law at Dortmund.
Oh, yeah, now you're talking. Keep going. Yes. Poch hails club's resilience in keeping young core together at Dortmund.
Mm.
That's my headline for next year. After a record Bundesliga start, club record Bundesliga start for Dortmund, Poch says we can win it all.
Yeah, Poch says we can do it all. Yeah, that works. That works.
After five games, what would it be? October. So maybe you're looking at like what? One, three, four. After eight games, Dortmund are yet to concede a goal, having scored 29. That kind of vibe.
That is wild.
It's not a Dortmund podcast, Musa.
Not yet.
Okay, let's finish on this one from Nicholas Bampton. I enjoyed your dream career path if you were players. What would be on each of your fantasy CVs as coaches? So should we go from retirement? Moussa Kwanga announces retirement at the age of 36. The former Manchester United and Feyenoord pass first striker.
That's so funny you mentioned Feyenoord, because that's the first... I go to Rotterdam.
It's the first place. So you'd be at Manchester United until you were 34, and then you'd go to Feyenoord for 2 years, and then...
I'd coach.
And then retire and coach.
I'd coach at Rotterdam.
Wow.
Yeah,
I'd
start at Feyenoord.
What, as a first, you take straight over the first team?
No, I do youth stuff.
Yeah.
Just go in like youth stuff, ease myself into it, just watch, get to know people, have conversations in the area, like just, you know, get into the youth stuff, assistant first team coach. We go on a deep run in the Europa League. We don't win, but people are like, start paying attention. We like what you're doing. Offer comes in from the Bundesliga.
Which club?
Gladbach.
Wait, hang on. So you're still assistant?
Yeah, still an assistant. Yeah,
and you get an offer from Gladbach?
Yeah, to go and do assistant stuff. Me going, I'll take what you offer. I like what you're doing. So assistant.
So you go, and you're going to be Marco Rose's assistant?
Yeah, just in the kind of camp. You know, just one of the people like this in the camp. And then, so final Gladbach, and then do really work Gladbach. And then the offer comes in from Spain. And then it's like Sociedad. And I still haven't got a big job yet. It's still like just there.
Sociedad's your first senior job?
I would say, yeah. Sociedad's the first senior job.
Wow.
Sociedad. And
you're just thinking of the food, aren't you?
Here's the thing. Look at Clarence Seedorf. He had a great time, but he had a great career, but he also enjoyed the cities. So you get to live in great cities and great vibes, but also Sociedad first job. And do really well there, get top six, but like play the bit, like we're the team that everyone hates playing against. And we make the Anoeta a terrible place to come and play again. Like we don't win the league, but we stop good teams winning the league. Like big teams come to us on Sunday night and it's raining and we turn them over 4-2 with brilliant counterattacking football. And then from Sociedad, I get offers in the Premier League, but I don't take them. Stay at Sociedad an extra year, and then I finally go to the Premier League, and I think I go to, because I'm like Johnny Depp, I don't want to go for all the big hits. Johnny Depp basically didn't do blockbusters until late in his career, so I think I go from Sociedad to West Ham. I go to West Ham, and I'm like, if we're going to do this, let's do this. No nickel and diming. Sort the academy out, recruit from Essex, like get the youth system really, really popping. So long after I'm gone, they'll still be producing talent. And we make West Ham absolutely boss. And the big offers come in, but I just end up staying there. Because I'm like, there's money, it's London, it's a vibe. I just stay at West Ham. And I'm like, West Ham has to return to where it was in like the 70s. It's got to be that club. That stadium, it will never be Upton Park. It will never be Upton Park. No, but there's an energy and a vibe that West Ham deserve, and it's such a sleeping giant, and it'll become a club that becomes a threat. If I stayed there for like 5-6 years and just coached the absolute hindquarters of it, it would be like the natural destination for a whole generation of players.
Okay, so how old are you now? Late 40s?
Yeah, early 40s. So,
no, because if you retired at like 36, you spent a couple of years at Feyenoord, then you spent a couple of years at Gladbach, and then you went to Sociedad for a couple of years. That's 42, and then you've been at West Ham for 6 years.
Yeah, then I'd...
48.
And I would just, I'd never coach in the Premier League again. I wouldn't take a Premier League job because I couldn't bear to coach against West Ham.
Oh,
because
my God.
I wouldn't coach in the Premier League again.
Absolute fan lip service.
I'd go to Napoli after that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Then I go to Napoli, West Ham, Napoli, then I'd be done. I'd be done after that.
How long have you been at Napoli?
Until I got offered a national team job.
Which national team? Uganda.
By that point, I might go and coach Uganda by that point.
Oh,
why not? Why not?
Then I know where it goes. Then you end up heading up the Ugandan FA.
Just like
then
my granddad.
You end up running for presidency.
Just like my granddad. Yeah. Yeah. So Napoli, then go and coach Uganda. Like, who would not want to play for you? You go from there to there and then like really professionalize the coaching. Like, that'd be wild.
That sounds amazing. Not going to lie.
So yeah, that's my path.
My path would be I'd finish at Arsenal on my second stint, retire there. Straight away, I'd go and coach the like under 18s.
Love it.
Do my badges.
Love it.
Spend 3 years coaching the under 18s. And then Arteta's like, come in as my new assistant. So I do 3 years with Arteta as assistant. And then I go for the Brentford job.
Love it.
Who have just missed out on promotion again. And we finished second in the Championship my first season. And we get promoted to the Premier League. And basically, I'm just trying to pull all the Arsenal boys in on loan.
Incredible.
And then we end up finishing 12th in the Premier League in our first season. Everyone's just like, can't believe this. A couple of bigger signings, finished 9th the season after. So this is my end of my third year.
Amazing.
And then an offer comes in from Newcastle. Finished 14th that year.
Wow. Now
and I'm like, well, I've taken Brentford to 9th. Done 3 years, 2 in the Premier League, kept him in it. Newcastle.
Can't say no.
And do you know what? Newcastle have been down and come back up again and nearly gone down again. That's how turbulent it's been.
That's amazing. This is awesome.
So I go to Newcastle. First season, it's not great, to be honest. Finished 13th. Second season, get to the Carabao Cup final, but we lose against Manchester City. But we end up via some weird thing qualifying for Europe. In the Europa League qualifying stages, and we get through to the Europa League group stages. That season's hard because of the Europa League, but we managed to finish 7th and we actually win the Carabao Cup that year. And we get into the round of 16 in the Europa League and then get knocked out by Sevilla.
Oh, Sevilla's not a bad one. Yeah, Sevilla, fair enough. Eventual winners.
So this is the end of my second season at Newcastle. And then, oh no, it's the third season. So I do one more season at Newcastle and we finish 6th, guaranteed Europa League. Everyone's mad hyped. New ownership, consortium led by a team of rich Geordies who are long time Newcastle fans.
Perfect. Look at that.
And I'm like, do you know what? You guys are good. And then...
He's coming home.
No. Because of the work that I've done with bringing young players through, Ajax make the call.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
And I'm like, yeah. I'm there. This is like 12, 13 years from now, right? In my dream world, there's more parity amongst all the leagues in Europe. So the Eredivisie is attracting real major talent and all of the Dutch sides are going deep in European competitions. And I haven't thought any further ahead of that.
Your base happens if Pep goes to Ajax. You're basically Pep going to Ajax. That's what it is.
Raiola.
That's actually perfect. If Pep had gone to Ajax after Barca, when everyone in the world was like, where's this guy going? And he'd gone to Ajax, would have transformed the Eredivisie. But that's a really great career path.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice, huh? It'll change next time, I'm sure. Let's get out of here.
Let's do it.
We hope everyone's doing okay. We hope you enjoyed the 100th episodes. I hope you're feeling positive about your clubs now that the transfer window has slammed shut.
Indeed.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at Stadio. If you want to follow us on Instagram, it's at Stadio Football. Don't forget to check theringer.com/soccer. Playing out this week on JTC, King of the Box, handing over to another king of the penalty area, the plasma striker Moussa Okwonga. Any wise words before we go?
I would just say that, 100 episodes in, think of all the hydration that hasn't happened in the course of these podcasts. I just think the next 100 episodes, if you're still here by that time, we're so grateful you're still here. Please hydrate regularly throughout the episodes. Let's get to 200 if we can, all of us together, having drunk regularly throughout each episode before and after. So just stay hydrated on the roads, in your homes, with your loved ones.
Sounds like That's a load of hot air to me. And you know what hot air is? Vapor.
Oh, the lyrics.
Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll be back on Monday with a what if?
A what if. Why not? A what
Let's
if.
Let's do it.
See you then.
Take care, everyone. I'm here to let you know.